It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. And, but we have plenty of, cause to be afeared. But I tell you this, if we know what's coming, a lot of times it makes it a lot easier on us. We can at least, step off the track. You know, we see it coming, we know it's coming, let's move over here so we don't get hit by it. But, you know, the train's coming. Oh, here it comes. And it's going to derail, too. So I thought we'd get some information that we need from a good friend, Karen Kwiatkowski. Now, Karen is a retired United States Air Force Lieutenant Colonel that worked in the Pentagon. You know, she's there as, you know, Rumsfeld and Cheney, those guys walking back and forth in front of her as they're, you know, planning to dominate the planet. And we can go on and on and on about that. And 9/11, the Pentagon hit. She was there when that happened. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. I mean, she did an article that it's titled "The Wolf You Feed." And reading this, it was so simplistic. And that's what we need. We need to get bumper sticker, man. I mean, we need to get down to what's really going on. And what she's talking about is the, I don't know, the imminent implosion of the military-industrial complex. Because why? Why, Karen? What's imminent?
Well, actually, what worries me is that the military-industrial complex is publicly expressing its concern that it's not going to have the money that it wants, that it believes it needs to continue its, as you put it, world domination, which is certainly, I think, on the agenda. And so it's running out of money. It feels the pinch. You know, the wars that the Pentagon has been devoting itself to, some of them we don't know about, like what's going on down in Colombia. We don't hear much about that. They're spending lots of money there. But certainly in Afghanistan, in Iraq, any potentialities against Iran, Pakistan, Yemen, these places that were spending money, concerns even against Russia, concerns even against China to some extent, as China continues to grow and expand its own military. These are on the plate, and so they need money to pay for all these things. This is very expensive, what they're doing, these annual budgets, these emergency appropriations that they continue to ask for. I mean, they're a hungry organization. And what we saw earlier this week, I guess over the weekend, is McMullen speaking to a group of people where Admiral McMullen, chairman of the JCS, said that
Joint
the biggest
Staff.
Threat to national security is the national debt. Now, he's not talking about national security. He's talking about his organization. And because they are recognizing that they now are going to be looked at hard for cuts, and this is cuts so that the old people can go to the doctor. This is cuts for fundamental things that a lot of Americans expect. They're going to fight for what they want. And my point in the article was, you know, the old story, people can have probably heard it before, but the wolf that wins is the wolf that you feed. Now, we've been feeding the Pentagon for a long, long time. And in the Indian, in the Native American kind of story, they're talking about something inside of a single person. So if you stopped feeding the wolf, if that was the evil side and you didn't feed that anymore, then it would die off. But I don't think a country is like that. We can't just stop feeding the military. The military is alive, and it's not going to let us stop feeding it. And that's really the underlying concern and why I wrote that article.
Well, it's worse than that. I mean, it's they have the guns. And
absolutely. They're just like a wolf. They got teeth and claws and an ability to hunt in a pack.
And
you know,
lobbyists.
Strategize.
And
they're
lobbyists.
Not going to go hungry. You can be sure of that. And yet, we're the ones that they rely on to, you know, we're like their food in a way.
Well,
so,
we
and many people emailed me after that article, and they said, well, you know, it's all good and well. I appreciate you writing that. What are we supposed to do? And I'm like, well, you know, I don't know exactly what to do.
When there's no food, wolves go hungry, too. You know, you kill off your prey. Well, guess
exactly
what happens?
Right. Exactly, you know, right. You know, they eat dogs. There's no dogs running around in North Korea. We say, you can't eat dogs. You can eat dogs. If it's a choice between, you know, not eating at all and eating a dog, you're going to eat a dog.
You know, so, I heard one time somebody said, they go, you guys don't know hunger in America. And, I'm sure we don't. And he goes, I'll tell you, when I know you start feeling the hungry, being hungry in America is when all the pigeons are gone.
Yeah. Oh, it's true. And you know, it's not even just us against really, really poor countries. I know when we lived in Italy, I was assigned and spent 3 years in Italy, and I lived out off the base with other Italians. You did not see a lot of wildlife. They trapped and hunted all kinds of things that you wouldn't even think to eat. And people raised animals in their backyard that you also wouldn't think to eat, little like swallows and things like that. They would actually consume them. So
I got chickens in my backyard. Got chickens. You know, I get like four or five. I got six chickens. I get four or five eggs every day. If I'd known chickens was going to be this easy, you live kind of a rural existence.
We have all that stuff, yeah. And it is great. It's a great thing. But we are a blessed country and we're a wealthy country. Even though we have these in terrible debt and hard times and a huge socialistic government that we can't afford. But you know we are a country that has it good, and so it's fair for other countries or other people from other cultures or other experiences to look at us and say, yeah, you're really rich and you really have it good. And
but we know what's
coming.
The biggest
problem in America is obesity, because you got plenty of food, but.
Now we got cornstarch, corn syrup. You know, one thing I wanted to focus on your article here is that we have the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Now, tell me what that position is. Now, it's a cabinet position, and he sits at the table. I mean, what is it Admiral Mullen does? What's his position?
Well, he's the top. He's the top general. His position, Department of the head of the military head of the DOD. And actually, McMullen, one of the things, you have, and I don't even know the names of who's running the Air Force or who's running the all these systems. But when you have your combatant commanders, and Petraeus is a combatant commander now. So he's like a big, action guy conducting war, making decisions. The guys who sit back at the Pentagon is the head of all the services on the Joint Chiefs. Okay, and the top guy, who is, in this case, Mullen right now, Admiral Mullen is the top guy. These guys are political advisors to the president and that kind of thing. They're not commanders, okay? So they're not, like, Mullen, when he's giving speeches, he's not necessarily going around talking to soldiers because they don't need to hear what he has to say because he's not in charge of them, per se. The chain of command that they have runs through their combatant commander, and that goes direct to the president. But these guys are political animals. They're looking out after things like the budget, like the future, the resourcing, which he's crying about now. So these guys are the kind of suits, basically. These are the military suits. And, Americans, we like the military. We tend to respect physical bravery and all that. And when we think about those things, what we think about, if we have to think about our military at all, is going to be combatant guys. It's going to be combatant commanders, guys out there doing the business of war. Obviously, no wars we've been running for years and years have had anything to do with defense. They've all been political wars for certain classes of folks that wanted those wars. But America's, we like military, but what we like is combatant. We don't like the Mullins of the world, okay? We don't care about the JCS because that's a political animal, and it's geared to keeping that bureaucracy funded, keeping that bureaucracy powerful, keeping that bureaucracy credible, and I put that in quotes, credible, because of course you can't believe anything that they say, but can they convince Congress to do things? Can Mullen, and so things that guys like the chairman Mullen and other folks that will speak to Congress, they're trying to say, hey, we're important, we do defense. Of course they don't do defense, and actually they're not important in the sense that they make a real difference for this country.
Well, where did Mullen come from? Who? How did he get that position? Who appointed him? What was his previous job?
I don't have his bio in front of me. Mullen actually was, I think he was, he was either a fleet commander or combatant commander. I mean, he's had a lot of different jobs. And he has been, I don't mean to write this article to pick on Mullen, per se. He's saying what anybody in his position would say. They want money. And they're afraid it's going to get cut, and so they're playing the, you know, they got to propagandize a little bit to see what they can do. They're worried that the national debt is going to shrink the military. You know, damn well better. It ought to. It should. But they're worried, and they're going to do everything they can do to help prevent, you know, they don't want to have their cut being taken out. But Mullen himself, not a bad guy. Mullen has been a wise person for a long time. He has spoken out in the past from different positions that he had. He's spoken against trying to expand the war to Iran, for example.
Well, he was another, they're going to push the button on us, but I'll tell you this, Mullen came in with Bush and Obama kept him. I mean, that tells you a lot right there. So we'll be back talking more about the military, its future, and what it means to our pocketbook when we come back with Karen Kwiatkowski in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Oh yeah, satisfy me here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and I get last assification, whatever word I need to use, from Karen Kwiatkowski. Now, Karen Kwiatkowski is a lieutenant colonel from the Pentagon. She was there while all of this build-up and drum beating the war was going on, and she had something to say about it. And finally, she said, you know what, I'm going to retire. I'm going to say even more about it. And this is, she. You can see a lot of her stuff on Lou Rockwell, L-E-W, Rockwell.com. And this is where we got the article, you know, the wolf you feed. I mean, if you're feeding a certain part of your economy, a certain part of your culture, a certain part of yourself, well, guess what you're going to get more of? Well, we've been feeding the military, and now there's a threat that they are going to have to do without or going to get less. And, man, there's an entire complex saying, oh, no, 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 no. Why do you think we put these guys in the positions we did is to make sure that that doesn't happen to us? Well, you know, one of the things I want to get into, you know, I wanted to, before I forgot, Karen, I want to let you know, at the top of the next hour, we got William Buport. He writes for Lou Rockwell quite a bit, too. Mm-hmm. Bill mm-hmm. Buport's coming on to talk.
Another former military guy, too.
And he's down near Fort Huachuca down here, still doing contracting, whatever. He knows what's what. And I'll tell you this, he's going to be talking about the Articles of Confederation and how this Constitution, like Lysander Spooner said, man, if it didn't cause a lot of this stuff, it sure as heck didn't prevent it, you know. So,
sure.
So we're going to be talking about that. I'm sure you probably have a comment on that when you get a chance. But the bases, I mean, tell me about these bases. A lot of people, I remember we were having you on the radio on my show and Charles Goyette's show and mm-hmm. stuff before. We're going, does anybody even know how much money we're spending on these permanent bases? Heck, our base in Baghdad is bigger than Vatican. I mean, this is, you know, gazillions of dollars. We were never going to leave. Well,
that's
tell
right.
us about that.
Well, and you know, a couple of ways that you can tell we were never going to leave, because I think that's I should never say never, but in our lifetimes, okay? So that's good enough. We're not going to leave for 20, 30 years.
No, McCain said 100.
The plan was to stay long term, and there's another whistleblower out there, and I've mentioned her name before, Bunnatine Greenhouse is her name. And she's not a real well-known whistleblower. She was a civil servant, and in January, February of 2003, right before the launching into the Iraq, they were doing a lot of contracting. She worked for the Army Corps of Engineers. She was a contracting officer, and that's what she'd done for 30 years. And so, you know, she's pushing paper. And some of the paper they tried to get her to push was to do no-bid contracts to Halliburton and some of these other companies, big government-based constructors, the base-building contractors, and they're giving contracts, no-bid contracts, and you can justify a no-bid contract if you have an emergency to fill. Like, you know, say you're doing something in New Orleans after Katrina. They did no-bid contracts as an emergency. They didn't have time to do the 30 days and the announcement and the whole bit. So they tried to get her to do no bid contracts under an emergency, but they wanted them to be for 5 years. And she said, you can't have it both ways. You either it's a 5 year and you compete it, it's long term, it's not an emergency, or it's an emergency and you have to recompete it in 6 months. That's what the Federal Acquisition Regulation says. That's what you have to do. So that's what she told them. Well, they told her to shut up and do what she was told, and she said no, because I have a contracting warrant, which is a license to et cetera, and I'm going to be honest to what I have to do. I have to follow the rules or else I can be barred of, you know, lose my job. Well, she lost her job anyway, of course, but anyway, this is her story. So long-term was always the plan number one for construction of bases. There's clue number one in before we ever went in there that they were going to build long-term bases. Clue number two. They put them in all the strategic locations. Of course, some were on top of bases that Saddam Hussein had or facilities that he had, and they expanded them. But whose specs did they build them to? American specs for American aircraft, for American weapons, for American bunkers, for American workers? Or did they build them to Iraqi specs so that we could leave them behind? You know how we always sell the less popular, the weaker allies? We sell them the old stuff, right? If we're going to sell airplanes to somebody, we don't sell them the latest thing we have, right?
Mm-hmm.
No country does that. We don't do that either. We sell them, you know, last year's model while we have this year's model to make sure we have the edge. That's how we sell stuff around the world, which is a big business for us, too, is selling arms. That's the only thing we still export. So, anyway, we are constructing these bases by top-of-the-line, first-rate technology American specs to support our next-generation aircraft. Landing. We want landing facilities for our aircraft, okay? Not stuff for them. So the big bases that we poured a lot of money into, we built these bases as permanent American bases, as if the Iraqi people don't matter. You know, we talk about their democracy. They want us gone. They've wanted us gone from day one. We haven't left. Not only haven't we left, we took over a bunch of their property and turned it into American property. We're squatters, and we squatted for the long term, and we squatted with high-tech military stuff. So the bases that we have left, I don't know their names particularly. There's four major bases that we poured a lot of money into. Most of our guys are there. There were hundreds, literally hundreds of locations where soldiers were. And as we have drawn down, you know, we've pulled away from a lot of those locations and vacated those. But the ones we put the money into, the big money, those where our 50,000 troops are scattered. And not just that, you mentioned contractors. Absolutely. For every of those 50,000 combat troops and combat support troops that are there, we have an increasing percentage. I don't know what it is, if it's 1 or 1.5 per soldier, but there is a civilian contractor working there, too.
And larger. It's larger. I want to make sure that everybody understands this.
I don't need a military guy to do my network. I hire somebody from, you know, Northrop subcontractor to do my network for me. So you've got all these other people we're not even talking about working on these American bases that we've kept here, and all of it is irrelevant to what the Iraqi people want. We talk about their democracy. It makes me sick.
You know, I want to make sure everybody understands this one point. There are more private contractors doing the bidding of the United States and the military and support structure of making somebody a bunch of money than mm-hmm. there are soldiers.
That's right. And so when I say I don't know the ratio, if it's one contractor per soldier or 1.5, you know, it could be two. I don't know. But it is at least a minimum one for one. And then you think about the green zone. I mean, who's providing security for that? Some soldiers, some contractors. You know, this whole thing is just...
Well, you also make the comparison with South Korea. It's like a model that they love this model because isn't really actual conflict. You don't have body bags. But you got a nice big line on your spreadsheet. We need money for the troops on the demilitarized zone there in Korea. Okay.
That's right.
Well, they're going to try and do exactly the same thing here.
Yeah. I actually wrote an article which I could not find. I've switched computers a few times since it was written in 2004, and I wrote it for I mentioned it in this article for Lou earlier this week, but hopefully I can dig up that article somewhere. But I was quoting someone from the Pentagon who actually said that the U.S. Forces Korea model is the model that we're pursuing for Iraq, and this is back in 2004, and of course it was. Now, they didn't continue with that because that U.S. Forces Korea model is not very popular. First off, it's stupid. You know, it makes no sense. It sucks a lot of money. The Koreans are sick of it. The Japanese are sick of it. They've got a similar thing going on their islands, you know, with Okinawa and whatnot. So, you know, it's not a popular thing to talk about, but that's the model that the government is looking for. So if you want to know how long we're going to be in Iraq, well, how long have we been in South Korea? Okay? Because it's the same thing. Maybe one is communists or North Korean crazies. The other one is Islamo-fascist, whatever that is. I'd like to meet one someday. I really would love to have a conversation with an Islamic religious believer who is also simultaneously a fascist. And just putting those two words together is just amazing to me. But, of course, Americans suck. You know, they buy this up. They chew it up and go, oh, well, I'm scared of an Islamo-fascist. They don't know what either one of those things are, much less put together. They don't exist, even. It's just crazy. But
well, this,
okay,
this talk
an imaginary
about...
enemy.
Let's talk about your
50,000 troops and permanent bases that will have to be fed and cared for into the future.
Because these wars aren't meant to be won. They're meant to be fought. They're meant to be funded. They're meant to be, you know, somebody get their cut. And when you're talking gazillions of dollars, you know, there's a bunch of lobbyists walking around saying, you know, that's, you know, some of that's mine. So it gets to the point to where, and then you got this defense of Israel thing going on. And
well, I don't even know what that is. Yeah. I mean,
well, it's in the news now. You got them coming. You know, I don't even pay it. I know. Oh, give me your spiel on this. I mean, Israel is running our foreign policy. How much?
Politically, it does a lot of things that we do. It wants money for its government. I mean, you talk about a socialist state. You know, you can't even own private land. Even Israelis have long-term leases on property rather than actual property ownership. So the way Israel is run, you know, we constantly talk about it as a little democracy. Well, certainly it has democratic features, but it's also a little socialist, you know, almost fascist state in how little freedom that it has and how much manipulation in its industry has their government, that they allow their government to have, or the government allows industry to have, however you want to look at it. But it's very much meshed together. It's not the American model. They don't have a constitution like ours. They don't share the culture. I mean, this country of Israel, the government of Israel, comes, it's transplanted from, you know, really the heart of Germany, the heart of Europe, European
socialism.
Oh,
we're going to get more into Israel when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with somebody that knows from the Pentagon. We'll be right back.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It ain't so groovy when you're screaming in the night. Let me out of this cheap B-movie. Headlong down the highway, and you're rushing headlong out of control. And you think you're so strong, but there ain't no stopping. And you can't stop rocking, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Complain here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, Karen Kwiatkowski, PhD in, I don't know, PhD in what? World politicking kind of domination stuff?
It's called world politics, but
yeah, same thing. You know, I just got a call in the break from the production company that did the Pat Tillman story. It's released here, I think, in the Valley tomorrow. We got a couple of show times that a bunch of the guys are going midday, and then tomorrow night we're going to go watch that. So next week we're going to have representatives of the film come on the show. And
well, that would be good.
Yeah, that story right there. This movie so needed to get done. And I know you know a lot about it, and we've been covering it. What a bunch of liars, which I want to get to. But real quick, before we get to that, I wanted to, you know, let you finish up on the Israel aspect of this.
Well, and, I guess, and I don't mean to be hard on Israel.
Anybody Israel taking my money. I don't care who's taking it. I don't care who's taking it. Just everybody stop taking it. But they're like this, like this 51st state or something.
Yeah, they are. And they, you know what the problem is for us? And it's not Israel's fault per se, but Israel is a little country, a little socialist country, oh, by the way. You know, a kind of an interesting little model that is not an American model. But they're a country that their government, okay, which controls their industry, looks out after itself very well. And they have an opportunity in our system of government to influence our politics. And they do it. And they do it very well. It's not illegal for the most part. I mean, obviously, it's a little distasteful when we get spied on. You know, it's a little distasteful when Israeli money throws elections one way or another, and it does sometimes when they've identified an enemy of Israel in the political realm. Oftentimes, they can be very successful in throwing money to that person's opponent. They've done it before. Lots of evidence out there. You know, and we're not supposed to talk about this, but the fact is, most of what they do, probably 90% of what they do in this country, affecting politics and policy, and particularly foreign policy is what they're interested in, and technology policy and industrial policy, all those things. That 90% of it they do legally. Our country is an open country in many ways, and we're susceptible to that. And that's all, you know, I mean, you should be able to talk about that. I mean, you know, if you're getting kicked every time you go out the front door, you know, and because somebody's sitting on your front door because you said it was okay for them to sit there, you know, we ought to be able to talk about that. You know, we ought to be able to talk about it. So, yeah, I think a lot of Americans don't really get Israel. They think Israel and they think some sort of biblical, religious stuff that they're being told on Sunday morning. And they don't really get, from a realist political sense, what this country is. And it's just a country looking out after itself. But unfortunately, tail wagging the dog often in our policies. And so it is really very difficult to separate out Israel's interests, Israel's influence on what we're doing, certainly in the Middle East. Now, there's also oil. And so a lot of people say, well, that's not Israel, it's oil that we want. Or other people say, well, it's China and Russia. And so we want to have the Central Asian Caucasus, you know, we want to be able to push back in this grand strategy. But you know what? Some of this stuff won't sell, and Israel is influential. So regardless of why we're there, you know, whether, maybe some of our politicians are using the Israel angle to get there for other reasons. But, you know, it's definitely a factor, and it's definitely stupid, and it's definitely not in the United States' interest. And they're not a 51st state. They would have less influence if they were a 51st state. Because they'd have two senators and one representative, you know.
Well, tell me about...
I don't know what their population would justify.
Well, tell me about the real, you know, since you got PhD in world, global, whatever. You know, China and Russia, are they connected in any way? Or we got two separate contenders for the throne here that we're having to contend with?
Well, you know, Russia... I mean, look, connected, I don't think historically they've been... connected geographically, they're spread out culturally, very different. You know, they're gonna work together when it makes sense, and not when it doesn't make sense. And certainly, Russia is not what Russia was when it was the Soviet Union. Of course, it was not very well funded when it was the Soviet Union. They spent a lot of borrowed money, printed money, just like we're doing now. So you know, but I don't see them as huge global threats. I mean, you know, the world has changed, and I'm no fan of Tom Friedman. You know, Thomas Friedman, who writes for the New York Times, he's a big pro-war lover, and I don't think he's all that bright. But he's made a few pithy comments which make a lot of sense. And he wrote a book some years ago called The World is Flat, and he, trying to talk how the world has changed, and it has become more connected in many ways, electronically, you know, through the internet, really. I mean, you could be talking to me in, you know, I'm three time zones away. I could be 11, you know, I could be 12 time zones away, and it wouldn't make much difference. We could still communicate. That's the nature of how things have changed. And I think this idea of great mass wars between great nations with great, lines of communication and, you know, these massive, I think they're imaginary. Certainly, if you're government, you might like to sell those wars because they can certainly allow you to gain power. War does nothing but reduces the power and freedom of individuals and centralizes it into the state's control. So war is good for the state. War is the health of the state. You know, you've heard that, and I'm sure you say that every day. So, you know, getting wars and grand wars and selling that idea is something that governments are interested in.
But what is the real threat? What is the real threat? What's the real threat?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know. I mean, you got China. One, Iran is the big threat now. No. I mean, and they're doing exactly the same thing as they did.
Iran is laughable as a threat. It's a really poor choice. And I think this, again, is Israel's influence. Because for Israel, Iran does represent some sort of... concern that they've had really from the beginning. It's a wealthy, powerful, culturally intact country. But you know Iran's history, you know their history for 2,000 years? They haven't invaded anybody. I mean, they just don't do it. So, you know, it's almost like India in the sense of not really being that interested in invading and expanding. China's biggest problem is China. I mean, come on. You know, it's just, you know, billions of people. With maybe 35 different languages that they speak, very wealthy, but the wealth is concentrated. You know, they haven't even brought up their whole society to some levels that we would consider even second world levels in many ways. So, you know, China is in no way, shape, or form ready to successfully create an empire. It has an empire already, and it's fallen apart at the fringes, which I think this continued annoyance of places like Tibet and issues, you know, in their borderlands are part of that problem. So China is not a threat in a grand sense of things. Certainly Russia is not that threat. Russia is kind of a, well,
the biggest threat to our military is not being able to fund our military at the levels they
want
anymore.
And also, look at what they want to buy. They want to buy fighter airplanes. They want to buy, you know, huge aircraft carriers. They want to buy, they want to buy things that we don't even use. Of course, they do want to buy lots of drones, you know, lots of unmanned aerial vehicles they can fly from Washington. Yeah, they want to buy those. But a lot of the big ticket items absolutely have no place in the 21st century in the way that we will conduct basically politics by other means. And
I'm afraid that they're going to get a lot of their drone and robots and automated soldiers and all that, and it's going to be ready to be Skynet and come against us. You know,
I see this as a real threat. Yeah. You know, and people say, oh, they would never do that. Well, don't say, you know, you can't really say that because governments constantly lie.
They're doing it. This crowd control denial, area denial, microwaving crap. You know they're prepping on that.
My husband pointed out something to me just in the news the other day where they're using a heat ray weapon against prisoners in American prisons.
Yeah, I had it on Freedom's Phoenix.
So, yeah, I mean, if the technology is there, if the money's been spent, if we bring it back home from overseas, are they going to mothball it somewhere or are they going to, you know, use it? Well, you know, they can think of the government. Look, if its lips are moving, it's lying. There's no doubt about that, that the government, I mean, the Tillman thing, just a little thing, didn't even need to lie. They did not need to lie about Tillman. This is what's so infuriating about it, you know? They didn't need to, but it was easier for the government to spin a web and to lie. And, you know, it's not the first time they did on that girl from West Virginia. Remember the little hero, little blonde-headed girl from West Virginia?
Jessica Lynch.
Remember her? I can't think of her name.
Jessica Lynch.
Yeah, they made a big lie about her.
You know what was interesting that'll come out in this movie I didn't know, doing some research, is that Pat Tillman was on that squad that went into the hospital.
Okay, which hospital? Oh, you mean?
To go get Jessica Lynch when they first started, you know,
they're
doing the film and everything. He goes, this is just
the lies entangle, don't they?
No, he knew. That was one of the, he was going to spill his guts. That's one of the reasons why the conspiracy theory is that they needed Pat Tillman to not be Pat Tillman over here. You know what I mean?
That's right.
So this is all going to come out.
And I hope people are waking up to this. And, you know, we need to stop giving them their money. And, you know, in effect, with our economy so bad, a lot of people aren't paying as much taxes because we're not earning as much. And, you know, so in some ways, nature will take its course and our government will become a little bit strangled. The problem is, you know, what will be its reaction as it starts to become hungry? I mean, this is something we have to think about. You know, we are the people. If we decide to stand up, and I don't mean tea parties or anything like that, but if we decide to stand up and say no, we can take back our government. No doubt about it.
I think what's going to happen is the government, we might, I don't even want to take it, then keep it.
I think
it's just going to fall.
I really do want to just get rid of it.
Yeah, it's just going to go away. We're going to keep ignoring it, and it's going to just, you know, wither on the vine.
We would be a lot healthier with a lot less government.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about in the next hour with William Buport, the Articles of Confederation, how we might be better off just going back the way it was. You know, Karen Kwiatkowski, Ph.D., retired lieutenant colonel from the Pentagon, we will have you back again soon. Thanks for coming on, Karen.
Okay, well, thanks for having me. It's been great fun talking to you.
You bet. And we'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with some more good information and what might the solution be when we get back.